Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. I'm Trent and it's great to have your company today for episode
75.
This week on Toy Power, we look at Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom in our Toy Power movie review. We then get into the soapbox. With me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Frank.
Ahoy, hoy.
Darren.
Hello, everyone.
And Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And let's hit up our first segment.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
May the force be with you.
Why man say forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
As you can see.
Yes, it's time to return to the world of Jurassic Park that was established so famously in the 1993 film Jurassic Park, based on the novel by Michael Crichton.
How many can you save?
11 species. Blue is the last of her kind.
You'll never capture her.
We thought you might know someone who could help.
A rescue op? What could go wrong?
What could go wrong indeed? So when the Jurassic World Island, the dormant volcano, which was there all along, surprise, surprise, comes back to life, Owen, Chris Pratt and Claire Bryce Dallas Howard mount a campaign to rescue the remaining dinosaurs from this extinction-level event. Directed by J.A. Bayona and written by Derek Connolly and Colin Trevorrow. It's currently sitting at a 6.6 rating on IMDb, and it's just above 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. This surprised me a little bit. It's got a budget of $170 million, so I think they did pretty well.
It strikes me as pretty low.
Pretty low, yeah. That's what I would have thought for the sort of special effects that we get. And to date, it has grossed over $1 billion.
Ooh.
So that's from the 9th of July. With 341 million taken in the US box office, I'd say that's a pretty successful return on investment from Universal Pictures and Amblin Entertainment. Might not quite reach the lofty heights of Jurassic World, which grossed $1.6 billion, but the Jurassic Park franchise has proven a pretty big money earner, with the franchise sitting at $4.7 billion for its five films. So that's almost an average of $1 billion per film. All right, so let's jump into this. What did we think, just on a non-spoiler perspective?
Yeah, look, I went in not expecting a whole lot, and that's kind of what I feel I got, to be completely fair. Like, I think they've done really well in recruiting Chris Pratt into that franchise. He gets you, you know, bums on seats, let alone aside from the dinosaur aspect of things. And even Bryce Dallas Howard is very good in her roles and stuff. Look, I thought it was, I think that, what did it say? 6.6 on IMDb. I think that's about fair. Yeah. That's sort of what I would consider it. Some really nice set pieces. I did feel it suffered a little bit from the curse of some of the coolest bits were shown in the trailer. Yeah. You know, where the T-Rex is in the shipping container and he dives through the jaws just as they close. I thought that was really cool because a lot of what we've seen of Jurassic Park to this point has been, you know, open environments and this sort of stuff. This was really closed in space. You had nowhere to go. I thought there was a few more jump scares in this one as opposed to previous entries, whereas a lot of it is the sort of impending dread and doom. This one felt like all of a sudden a dinosaur comes out of left field and that sort of stuff. I'm pretty sure my wife jumped at least four times by my count. But yeah, so more of the same, I think. Yeah. Ben.
Okay. So I like the fact that it talks about events straight after the previous film. Yeah. Like it's like, you know, hand in hand in the universe. And it highlighted the fact that all the public on the island sued the Jurassic Park venture for injuries and stress, which I thought was an awesome follow-up and kind of a news article to touch on. Made it feel more realistic and in-world, you know, to realistic, if that can be, yeah, you know, said.
Sort of a real world component.
Yeah.
Consequences.
Yeah. Yes, exactly right. Great visuals on dinosaurs, like beautiful close-ups of the dinosaurs. The, you know, dinosaurs to me look really, really good. Like it was hard to tell where the CGI and the real puppetry began and finished. Yeah. Like, I love that aspect. I really, really like the fact that the some of the herbivore dinosaurs received some decent amount of screen time, as opposed to always seeing the carnivores in the past. Mm. Shout out to the herbivore star of the film, and that was the Stigmoloch.
Yes, Stiggy, as they call him. I think that's the way to do it.
Yep, cool. He was awesome. Like, massive thumbs up to him.
Yep.
And last but not least, my wife and I saw it together, and we just deemed it too scary for our kids. Oh, 6 and 4, without a doubt.
Yeah.
To see. We'll wait until at least comes out on DVD. But just to put it in perspective, they've seen all the others on DVD at home. So, but we think this one is at a little bit higher level, and certainly not, you know, cinema worthy for kids at their age to watch.
And as someone without children, I totally agree with that. Trent and I actually caught it together, and we actually saw a pretty young child in the row, I think, in front of us, and we were quite surprised.
Pretty sure he shat his pants.
That was what that smell was in the cinema. I wasn't quite sure where that was coming from. But,
it might have been me. But...
but seriously though, I didn't think it was a kids' film at all.
No, I'd say pretty much under 10 at the cinema.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be recommending
a big kids' film, definitely. But
yeah, so what did you think, Darren? Overall, non-spoilery.
Look, I really enjoyed it. I agree with what you said about Chris Pratt and what he's sort of done to help reinvigorate the franchise, and major props to Bryce Dallas Howard. I think she always brings it to the table. Who would have thought Richie Cunningham's daughter would conquer the world? And Alpha Fonzarelli's goddaughter, by the way.
She's foxy, so yeah.
Yep.
She's also very, very talented and got buckets of charisma. So I think that helped carry it. As Ben said, the visuals were stunning, and you really did sort of wonder where, you know, a particular special effect began and ended in that sort of realm. I really enjoyed that. I sort of liked that they explored the two sides of, you know, those that are totally against these recreations of dinosaurs and then those that are trying to save them. I thought that was an interesting twist on real world events where, you know, we have people that are trying to preserve endangered species and people that are more, I guess, focused on whatever it is that sort of, you know, motivating them to not worry so much about that, whether it's...
Or hunting them and trying to put them up as a trophy.
Yeah, that too. Exactly. Yeah, that too. I thought that helped humanize it a bit.
Very good. Yeah, look, I won't talk too much because I think everyone said exactly what I thought. Won't reiterate it, but, you know, special effects were superb. And I was shocked when I saw that $170 million budget for what they did with this film for that money. They've obviously perfected the art form and are able to do it now fairly cheaply. Great work to keep the animatronics in there. So the Indoraptor, there was a lot of puppetry involved in that. I think the T-Rex scene in the shipping container also was very reminiscent of the Triceratops sequence from the original Jurassic Park, where they've got the actual puppet there on stage. So I'll talk more in the spoiler section about the plot, but I found, to Ben's point, he was quite right. There were some moments of it where they set it up really nicely, but then I think they just undid it with some very, very stereotypical characters, some plot points that were, I found, so absurd. I was just sort of shaking my head at the very thought, and I'll talk to what some of those are. And then I went back and rewatched the trailer, and in fact, I could almost talk about them in this segment because they mention them. They mention a lot of the plot points in the trailer itself, but I will just for fans that are listening, don't want spoilers, leave it to the spoiler section.
How did we find our cinema experience as far as anything unusual? Did we go at the super special cinemas or like gold class, anything like that?
I had a really good experience. It was a decent crowd. Like, you know, most of the top half of the cinema was packed out. Had people sitting next to me either side. So yeah, it was a good turnout for a reasonably early session of seeing it at the cinema.
Hmm. Probably the only thing that jumped out to me, you talked about, you know, small kids being present at this film. There was a small kid and who was probably in the first half hour of the film was up and down out of their seat about five times going, I don't know if they were going to the toilet or whatever. And
running for the door because they're scared.
Well, I thought that afterwards, but she had those shoes, you know, the shoes that light up with every step you take. And I'm like, in a dark cinema, who... No, that's not a great idea because it was just visually distracting. And yeah. I thought, oh, is there an usher that's trying to get somebody out or whatever with his torch? And I was like, no, it's just this kid going backwards and forwards.
And science has proven they don't make you run faster. as much as the little tags say, yeah. They do not make you run faster. That's so, it. Yeah.
All right. So let's get into the spoiler segment. We'll open up with, I guess, the bits that we like the most. So the best bits of the film.
We've sort of touched on the visuals, I think. I'm kind of struggling to think of a highlight of the film, to be completely honest.
Dinosaurs
were cool. Dinosaurs are good.
Chris Pratt with his clicker. Amazing what you can do with the clicker.
Come back to me, I'll think of something. Yeah. But
yeah, for me, and it's a bit of a sad moment as well, the part that the Diplodocus was trapped on a wharf.
Was it a Brachiosaurus?
Whatever. The part that the long-necked dinosaur was trapped on the wharf.
Sauropod.
Littlefoot.
Was so genuinely sad. And I applaud the directors and such for portraying that emotion to the audience. Yeah. Because like I was like, oh, I want to go back and save that dinosaur. And it was just so artistically done. Mm. And whatever the hell the type of dinosaur it was, I really, really felt for it. And I'm sad that this is being... shat on because of it. I don't know what type of dinosaur it was, but like I just thought that was a really cool moment. I think that would be a wicked poster, like just of the sort of head of the dinosaur, the mist. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Good call.
Pardon me,
all jokes aside.
Darren, any highlights?
Yeah, a few actually. I really enjoyed the most of the Bryce Dallas Howard stuff. I really found in Malcolm at the beginning really a good throwback to the previous Jurassic Park trilogy and helped link those two trilogies for me really well. That helped sell it. I thought he was consistent in the way he was written for Ian Malcolm 25 years from the first film. I thought that was pretty consistent and that was probably a little too fleeting for my liking. I would have liked to have seen a bit more of him in there, but I thought that was a really good throwback to the first two films in the franchise. I like the scene that Ben talked about because that was moving.
Yeah,
I really found the little girl's story interesting, and I know that's probably going to be criticized, and her grandfather's story and the twist around that I thought was quite powerful. And,
are we into spoilers now?
Yeah,
just to clarify,
I don't think they touched on it enough.
I agree.
Over talked about it. It's like, oh my gosh, look, you know, she's a clone. Like you sort of had that inkling. That photo of her as a young kid is exactly what she looks like now. So what's going on here? And then they drop that bomb. Like, yeah, she's a clone.
She was made in a lab.
And then it's like, oh, well, you're a clone. That's the end of that storyline. Let's move on to the dinosaurs.
Yeah,
let's go back to the dinosaurs.
I felt that was brushed over. And there's one bit where I think they're just escaping yet another dinosaur attack. And the girl is just sort of stunned. She's sitting there breathing heavily going, hang on, what just happened? What did I just get told? And then that's it. And you kind of wonder if some of that got cut on the editing floor or something like that. But yeah, for the build up, because they kept focusing on that the photo album. I thought it was brushed over.
Yeah, I agree. I still think it was an important plot point, but and I enjoyed it for what it was. But I was left wondering, like you guys, why it was glossed over so much. And the things that run through my mind when I see that is, you know, maybe scenes ended up on the cutting room floor, or maybe they're planning to do something a bit more with it in the next film, because often things are planned several films in advance now, as we well know, with major franchises. But I just thought it was really interesting, and I thought it was interesting to sort of hear the backstory and how it sort of linked back to John Hammond and, you know, and that, because this does really feel, you know, more connected to the earlier films than perhaps Jurassic World did. You know, it feels like it's the linking of two trilogies.
One other thing I have to shout it out. Not only is the cool bit at the end where they're like going in their all separate directions, like all the different countries, war-dominated people have bought the dinosaurs and they're all shipping them off. It looks like this franchise has an idea of which way they want to go. And it's not back to the island yet again. It's let's base it on something else. So, you know, next time, Dino Riders, I'm hearing, you know, that, like, let's arm these dinosaurs up with missiles and things and pitch that. Anyway, the other cool
thing... That's the spin-off. That's the next trilogy, not the next film.
And it's absolutely makes no sense, but it was so cool to see, and massive thumbs up for them doing it, because I didn't know I needed to see it until I actually saw it, was the T-Rex roaring at a lion. Like, it broke into the zoo. I just thought that was so cool. Like, here's the king of the jungle and the king of the dinosaurs, you know, per se. And they're you know, eyeballing each other. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, I liked some particular scenes, and I'll point them out, because they... were very Spielberg-esque in terms of their the way they were shot. The first one was essentially one of the opening scenes where they go to the park to try and retrieve some Indominosaurus Rex bones, and you know, they're cutting it away.
Submarine?
It's the submarine. Yeah. And there's sort of like the hapless guy who's trying to connect something in the dark, and then there's a flash of lightning, and you can see the dinosaur sneaking up on him. Yeah. And it sort of...
That's cool.
Turns into a sequence. I thought that sequence was particularly strong and had a very good sort of suspense element built into it. The other scene was when they basically first arrive on the Isla Nublar, and they get trapped in that sort of compound, and there's a dinosaur that the volcano starts to erupt, and there's a dinosaur that kind of comes into the compound. I thought, again, that scene was set up quite nicely and felt quite good. For me, then, when they go to the mansion, I just found a lot of that story so unbelievable at that point. Lost it for me, and I'll talk more in kind of the worst bits than that. Some really nice concepts as well in the save scene with all the dinosaurs sort of running and the gyrosphere going towards the cliff. I thought that was done very well, but I just didn't need to see, you know, another dinosaur getting eaten at the last moment by a T-Rex. It seems like that's now been done to death.
It's a staple, isn't it?
Like, yes. I'm about to get eaten, and then another dinosaur comes in and eats.
I'd love to know how a T-Rex sneaks up on you in that moment, because, you know, it's and that's a bit of movie magic, you know. On one hand, you can hear him coming for miles, and boom, boom, the big footsteps. And then other times he just comes out of, you know, exit stage left and just saves the day last second. But anyway.
While fleeing from a volcanic eruption, he's just worried about gobbling up dinosaurs on the fly as well.
Yeah.
But look, I think they did really, really well with some of those sequences, and I really enjoyed those. And yeah, reiterating, the performances were great from the actors in question. I thought some of the performances were a bit... cardboard cutout for some of the characters that we'll talk about a bit later on, but amazing special effects on the dinos. Definitely. Absolutely brilliant. All right, we might move on to some of our complaints or criticisms for this one. Frank, did you have anything to add here?
Unfortunately, what broke me, and it's fairly early on, is when the island starts to break up and there's the lava, and Chris Pratt has just been tranquilized, and he wakes up and the lava's, you know, a meter from him. And I'm just sitting there going, I'm not a geologist, but if you're that close to lava, you're dead already, mate. Like, and well done to Chris Pratt for selling the whole, oh, I've been tranked and I need to try and awkwardly climb over this log. I thought that was really good. That sort of...
Move your big toe. Yeah. Wiggle your big toe. Kill Bill style.
Yeah, I think he did that okay considering what he was given to work with. But I think there's even a point where he's trying to flick his arm up and the lava like kind of flicks his hand, or he flicks the lava. I'm like, you're dead, right? You don't even just, not even just like, ow, that hurt. If you're that close to active moving lava, you're gone. And I know that seems a silly thing to pick out in a movie about dinosaurs of all things, but that happens in the first, oh, I want to say first 20 minutes 20 of the minutes. Film, thereabouts.
Yep.
And from there, I was just like, you know, it broke the suspense of disbelief in a movie about dinosaurs for me.
It's funny you should say that because, you know, and this is not going to be popular, but I had that same sort of issue with the first Jurassic Park movie. And I'm going to get shot from this from a couple of people at work who listen to this podcast who are Jurassic Park diehards. But for me, having done research, you know, and done social research and that, there's always an ethics committee that has to approve everything before you can go out and do any research. And I'm just wondering, who approved John Hammond's research? And I can't, whenever I watch the first Jurassic Park movie, that runs through my head. I can see,
it's the same team that approved the turtles to become military cadets.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
same team.
Just the real world creeps in. So I can sort of see where you're going with the lava and that, because the real world logic does creep in. And all these films require a suspension of disbelief. And they're so spectacular and they're scary enough to make up for some of those real world things that I, being me, can't help but bring into it. But yeah, like I said, you know, even I caught some of the first Jurassic Park today and there's still part of me that's sort of, you know, and who proved this research again? How did you legally get permitted to do this?
Yeah, and
I think the connotation is that they went rogue. And essentially did it off books. Again, you know, maybe not plausible for real life, but you got to set it up somehow, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
So back to Frank's lava story. I've got three little things that really stuck in my thing, aside from the lava. So the storyline involved Claire Dearing, Bryce Dallas Howard, obviously, coming back as she was the only person whom could activate the handprint access to the buildings. I found that a bit hard to swallow with all the hackers in the world, or for that matter, all the other personnel whom worked on that island.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Another one, Owen, Claire, Franklin, and Zia all hide inside the back of the truck, assisting the Raptor Blue, and they stay there overnight without ever getting checked on, like, you know, until the next morning. Yes. Like, so that was a bit too long a period, you know, of time when they're talking about millions of dollars worth of, you know, merchandise. And the last one, the Indoraptor stabbed Claire in her knee with the sharp claws, and not long after she's walking around with a slight limp. I'm sorry, an injury like that wouldn't be able to put any weight on that injured leg at all. Like, and she was almost a jogging speed, you know. I just like, no. But aside from that, like, I mean, I may rat on the movie, but it was entertaining. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, look, they all are, I think. And, you know, suspension of disbelief is easy to do to some degree when you've got a spectacle like that.
Mm. For me, the setup had good elements, but then this magical volcano that's there and that it's just going to wipe out the entire island. And it's a pretty big island, right? I just didn't buy that.
If you were going to spend billions of dollars making a dinosaur park, wouldn't you check if there's a volcano there first?
Yeah. Our boss, we've got a volcano.
Felt like it had just been written in. Anyway, I didn't like that. And then the point that, well, they grew these in the first place. Theoretically, they can just grow them again. Mm. So
why are they chasing dino DNA?
The villain was just, or villains were just cardboard cutout villains. And like weaponizing dinosaurs with a laser tag system. Like,
wait. When you get a Dino Riders film, you'll be like, weaponize Dino Riders.
Yeah, but in this context.
Right, sorry.
Like, I want that.
In the established canon of four previous films.
That's right. And the whole thing, they need blue. Like, you need blue to imprint something on this dinosaur, but we've worked out how to point a laser and make it do stuff. I'm just like, what? This is just, that's just a plot device to make blue important, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
The magical gas. That gas. This gas is coming out. Oh no, it's convenient that unless we open the door, this gas that we can monitor on this system, that it's in this exact spot, is just going to kill all these dinosaurs. And they're like plotting where the gas is going. It's like, you don't have a system to plot the gas. Just these really convenient plot points. And then like explaining it. Oh no, they're all dying. We've got to do something to kind of set things up. Like, I just found just the... And then like... What was the Farmer Hoggett, James Cromwell, right? So the now written in partner that we never heard anything about in the past is written in. And I didn't mind that because I thought it was done quite well. And he's in a wheelchair. Yes, he's in a wheelchair.
I didn't mind that either.
Yet somehow someone's built an entire factory at the bottom of his mansion that's going to house tens, 20, 30... 40 dinosaurs.
And he didn't notice.
It was going to be the Bat Cave, but then they made it into the Dino Cave.
What the hell? And like all that stuff's just going. Like,
don't say that, Ben. I would have loved the Bat Cave.
I mean, that auction. Like, if I was at my parents' house and I invited a few friends over, they would notice, right? You invite an entire. Not only do you bring in, not only do you bring in, bloody 50 dinosaurs, but like all these mercenaries and stuff. What the hell? What the hell? He's going to notice that. Like, it's just stupid. It was just stupid at that point. Anyway, they like, I just found the plot.
Wasn't he confined, though, to...
You'd hear the bulldozer. you would hear the trucks bringing in all that equipment they needed to make those gates. Like, you may be confined.
Soundproof walls.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway,
well, he couldn't leave the mansion because there was all these steps going, flights of stairs going everywhere. So
that's true. Yeah. He was confused.
It's like, put him in a wheelchair. It's like, write the fact he's in a wheelchair, and that'll just explain away all these problems that we have. So he never left the. So look, it was entertaining, but it did my head in.
Yeah.
So much so that it did detract from me from my enjoyment of the film.
Yep. Understood.
Anything else? I noted a goof. Anyone else see any goofs? No. So there's a scene in the museum kind of part where there's like a... I think it's the Triceratops horn.
Oh, yeah. Or skull. Skeleton. Yep.
And there's a guard. He's walking around. The Indoraptor comes out and eats him and drags him behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then a minute later, you see them... hiding from the Indoraptor, and they go all the way around it, and there's no body or
didn't
remnants.
Didn't he eat the body though?
Did he eat the whole thing?
I thought
gobbled
so.
Gobbled it up.
Because they walk in and they see like the arm or leg or whatever it is poking out from behind it, and they're going to go over. Chris Pratt's going to go over and grab the gun, and then all of a sudden, boom, it disappears and the dinosaur's there. And I thought he just swallowed the guy whole.
Ah, okay, maybe that's what it is.
Right. Oh, did you
and
think
then,
that?
And then licked up all the blood.
That's cleaned it up. That's a fair point.
Cleaned it up for the PG rating that we've got, so it's convenient
I think it was rated M. Just to clarify.
Right. Yeah, because there was a fair bit of.
It'd have to be because I couldn't have taken my kids.
Nah, that's
they would
right.
have been still nightmares.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, we might just finish on the toys because this has had a pretty successful toy line. So it was the first time we got the toys from Mattel. After they won it over from Kenner/Hasbro. With figures coming in at the 3.7-inch scale, it's clearly a line designed to produce dinosaur toys and vehicles, and the figures are probably a little bit more of an afterthought, even though they're very nicely articulated for the size.
So just a shout-out to that. Sorry to cut you off. But so one thing my kids have gotten into from watching all these Jurassic Park films is the toys. And I've got to shout out the fact these toys are super affordable. Like I can pick up the smaller dinosaurs for $7 each if I shop around. Mm. And, so we've got just about the whole set of Wave 1 and things. And I was pointing out the car, the Jeep, you know, the thing, and it comes with the bird dinosaur. I'm not even going to try and name it because I'll get shot down. So the bird dinosaur, and the first thing my daughter says is, well, what's the point in getting the Jeep if there's no people to put in it? And so true. Like I have seen on my travels, I've visited a lot of toy stores recently, picking up dinosaurs and just browsing, and I've seen the figures once, and that was in a two-pack Owen and the Blue.
So we haven't got the single card figure releases. I think there are about 8 single card figures for Jurassic World 2, plus the 3 Jurassic Park retro style Legacy figures. We haven't seen any of those, so the only way you can get them is the Owen, I think, with the blue and the Claire Deering figure with the gyrosphere.
Yep. So I'm envisioning that Jeep being a peg warmer simply because there's no option except to put your G.I. Joes or something in there or other characters because there's no figures to buy.
And that's a really cool, like, brutal honesty from a kid to hear that. If that's what the kids are thinking, then they're not going to say, "Mum and Dad, buy me that one."
And that's fascinating because, you know, we know these lines are driven to kids. We talk about the decline of toys here, there, and everywhere, and the lack of releases. And this is where even a child is calling it out.
But that's not a fault of the line.
No, it's not. It's
that's a fault of distribution here in Australia.
And I agree. My kids are going to buy the dinosaurs over the humans any day of the week. But the fact that there's no humans even on offer is just plain right, frustrating.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Well, the humans and the dinosaurs to me are a big part of what drives the story of all the films. So I mean, to me, they go together. I can understand why a kid would choose the dinosaurs, but to me, they go together. I mean, otherwise, you're just playing with a bunch of dinosaurs. You're not recreating the story from the film films. I find that fascinating. I think the Mattel line is head and shoulders above what Hasbro did a few years ago with the first Jurassic World.
Yeah, agreed.
Obviously, you're never going to top what Kenner did back in the 90s. But yeah, it's a huge improvement over what we saw about 3 years ago with Jurassic World from Hasbro, I think.
Yeah, Darren, I know we've talked a bit about the Big W sale and people still wanting to buy toys if they're at the right price point. I think what Mattel has done here is they've given very affordable figures. Absolutely. Very, very affordable. And you know, to get a $7 dinosaur, basic dinosaur, $7 Australian, is super, super cheap.
Well, there's no other licensed property out in the market that for $7. That, like for under $10. Even the Ninja Turtles, unless they're on sale, they retail for $15. So that's the next closest best, you know, comparison figure.
Yeah.
So, you know, just a shout out to that. Like for half the price.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's phenomenal.
They've done very well in their strategy.
And I think it's better than what Hasbro put out personally. And 3 years ago, not to labour on that too much more, but better than what they put out, and they charged a lot more.
Yeah, no, exactly right. The big one in this line has to be the super colossal Tyrannosaurus Rex, which is a 3-foot-long figure-eating dinosaur. That is a beautifully sculpted piece, nicely painted as well. But for the most part, for the price point, you really can't complain too much about the articulation, the sculpt, and the paint-ups. They might be considered basic, but I think you do have to take into account the price point they're going for.
I think they're fantastic.
So they've done really well, in my opinion,
on this. The medium-sized ones are about $20 to $25, and they include electric sounds, so that's really cool. And movement, you know, you move the tail and the head moves, so that's really cool.
Yeah, the last thing I was just going to touch on was there's a few, Mattel do Matchbox, is that right?
Yes.
There's a few Matchbox scale vehicles as well. So they've sort of, I guess, branched this license into a number of different toys. You can get the RC gyrosphere as well as the more toy-based gyrosphere as well. So I think all in all, congratulations Mattel, because I think they've done well, and I think this would be a line that would sell strongly and would probably sell strongly even after the film, because I think dinosaurs generally a sort of evergreen style of toy.
That, I couldn't agree more. Just on the film, what are people's ratings of it? I know we've talked about what we did and didn't like about it. And Frank sort of said that he thought the IMD rating was about right. Is that where you'd lock what you'd lock in?
All right, so let's do that. Let's do out of 10. I think the fact that I struggled to find a favorite scene, you know, kind of speaks volumes as to my opinion on the film. I'd probably go, 5 out of 10. I'm in no rush to watch it again. It wasn't, you could see that it was, you know, it had the money behind it and the dinosaurs looked great. if I'm going to watch a dinosaur film, I'm going back and watching Jurassic Park 1, to be completely honest. Yeah. So, yeah, five
for me. It's a masterpiece, despite what I said about the ethics committee. so I hear what you're saying. Ben?
I'm going to mimic what the, what is it, Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. Yeah. 6.5. Solid 6.5. I know I rat on it a little bit, but it was like one of those leave your brain at the door, have a big bag of popcorn, and just be in for the ride. You know, there are aspects like the herbivores getting a lot more screen time, learning a lot more things, and that wharf scene of that long-necked unknown species of dinosaur
on the wharf was just amazing. Like, I think you were right.
I really took that to heart. I thought that was one of those moments in cinema that's like, wow, that's so impactful, cool. I thought that was really, really cool. So and it had a bit of frightness in it. It had a bit of scary moments and things that the other films I don't think really got there, because they were like, let's, you know, pitch it to the kids. So it's good to see it, you know, maybe with the aged group of the of the audience through the years. So
And it's great to have dinosaurs that only eat really bad guys or ancillary characters. Yeah. You know, when your 10-year-old girls are going to survive over trained military personnel. Gotta love the way they breed those dinosaurs.
So you're giving it a 10, Trent?
No.
But it's like a cat, though. He's distracted by the laser.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's on the wall. For all its plot flaws and characters that, for me, annoyed me, I thought the bad guy was awful. And there was an auction scene in there that I was cringing at, where they're not going to sell the special dinosaur. It's just for show. But then they got a bid on it, and they look at each other. Oh, maybe we should sell it. It's sort of, anyway, for me, I give it a 6 out of 10. I enjoyed the fact it had dinosaurs in it. If I don't think about the plot too much, it's a spectacle that you can enjoy on that level.
And I would go lucky last, and I would give it a 7.5. I thought it was, has its flaws, as we said, but as a popcorn film, it's a solid popcorn film. You could do a lot worse. As Ben said, it's got... you know, plenty of thrills and that to keep you entertained. So yeah, I'd lock in a 7.5 solid. Leave your brain at the door, just have some fun.
Beautiful. That's it. So there's our thoughts on Jurassic World. Undoubtedly, we'll be getting a third installment in the franchise, and we all know that it literally will be Jurassic World now.
Yeah, that was one of my things about when the first one came out. It was titled Jurassic World, and I went, it's not really world, it's just another damn theme park, and it's taken them an extra movie to get there, but yeah, I can see where that's obviously going to be
Jurassic,
the case.
Jurassic, another damn theme park.
Just didn't have the same ring, did it?
That was the running title for a while.
That's the trilogy after this one.
All right. Well, we've soapboxed that one. Should we do a bit more soapboxing?
Let's do an actual soapbox.
The soapbox. If you've got something you want to get off your chest and let out, it's therapeutic.
It's kind of ridiculous that I can't do that.
Oh my god, kill me now. Like, it's just the worst.
It's insane.
And I love it.
All right, over to Ben for... Is this the shredded debacle?
This is my shredder soapbox debacle, yes. So we're talking maybe 2 or 3 months ago that this ensemble originally started happening. So... So 2 or 3 months ago, I was on having a random browse on eBay, and I found a vintage Playmate Shredder variant I didn't have. That was Metal Mutant Shredder with Tiger Spirit armor from 1995. This was a loose figure with included the card as well as the bubble, and was 100% complete in really nice condition. This particular variant has a lot of chrome, so one in good condition was what I was really hunting for. So anyhow, I purchased it and waited for it to arrive all the way from the United States of America. About 3 weeks had gone by and I'd passed and I logged on to the tracking to see where it was in transit, and it showed it had arrived in Australia. Yippee, one thinks. At the end of that week, I still hadn't arrived on my doorstep. So I logged in again and the tracking stated it was in Adelaide. That's our hometown. Exciting. Maybe not. So after that weekend, I called up the tracking service, which happened to be USPS, to find out what the holdup was. And they said they had passed it on to Australia Post and gave me a tracking number to follow up through them. So I phone called to Australia Post, and they initially claimed that they had not recorded, they had no record of that package. At that point, I was absolutely gutted, and I just had this ill feeling sweep over me. So back and forth, I was in communication with the two distribution companies, trying to get some sort of answers and tracking numbers that would tell me where my damn package was. In the meantime of dealing with these two distribution companies, I shot a message to the eBay seller, giving him the heads up that my postal companies were having trouble locating my package, etc., etc. The eBay seller was really cool, and I looked into the tracking on his end and tried to assist. So, long story short, I finally received another tracking number from USPS, and I passed that on to Australia Post, and they raised the claim to a higher authority of their service. The first phone call I received from Australia Post was a guy who asked me what was the package, its value, etc. He seemed very robotic and, you know, by the book. A few days went by and no word from Australia Post. By this time, it was roughly 6 weeks since I'd my initial purchase of the Shredder figure from eBay. At the end of that week, I made another follow-up phone call to Australia Post to follow up to see where if it had any leads on my package. I spoke to a girl this time, and she was genuinely nice and really sounded like she was going to raise my issue even higher through the ranks. The very start of the following week, I received an email stating that from Australia Post were unable to find my package, that I needed to contact the sender and ask them to create a claim through their postal service to receive a full financial reimbursement. I got straight on the phone to Australia Post and said the sender was from overseas and such, and the Australia Post person said the claim would travel through the different distribution services and Australia Post would eventually get it and sort it on their end. So I emailed the eBay seller all this information, and he went down to his local post office service and explained the issue at hand. And they simply replied to him because it had left, once it had left outside of the US, it was no longer of their concern on their postal services, of which I totally understand. Like, I get that, right? So leaving me no other option. I was out of pocket, no figure in hand, no answer from either distribution centers. The damn thing supposedly was in Adelaide, but where do I go to find the item in Adelaide? Like, Adelaide's not a big place, but it's big enough to...
Still a needle in a haystack.
Exactly. So I placed... the only option I had was to place a claim through eBay, of which after a few days, the eBay found me in favour and refunded me the money, putting the seller out of pocket, which I felt so bad for because he'd been so good to me up till then. But it was my right as an eBay buyer purchaser.
Definitely.
Out of this whole debacle, I was so freaking angry with Australia Post. Their poor communication, as well as the fact they lost my package and got off scot-free.
Yeah.
Can I just quickly add a story to that? This wasn't going to be part of my soapbox, but it's just a perfect segue when you're done.
I've only got one more sentence. Yeah. But this story does actually have some sort of happy ending. As I placed another order for another vintage Playmate Shredder on eBay, and it actually turned up. Yay! Surprise, surprise. So this replacement Shredder was the Super Mutant Shredder from 1994. It arrived safe and sound without any hassles. So I'm still missing that initial Shredder figure. So it's a
different figure than the initial one. Yeah.
So if anyone's got listening to this podcast and just happens to have a Shredder with Tiger Spirit armor sitting in their play box and need some financial rewards for that, I'm your man, because I was gutted, and so much legwork to go through. I was always the instigator of the phone calls, the instigator of the emails, the instigator. No one. It was always, 3-4 days, business days later before anyone got back to me. But I found phone calls, straight talking to someone was always the best way and got the issue raised further. Very, very frustrating that Australia Post got. I mean, I award Australia Post for all their services and all the items they have sent me. But this situation, they dropped the ball massively. And for it to arrive in my hometown and then just go vanish.
And go disappear.
Very frustrating. Mm. Sorry,
quick,
Trent.
No, that's fine. Just a quick story. I ordered a big lot from Big Bad Toy Store. And again, tracking it on the way through. And on Tuesday, just gone, I get an email because I sign up for email notifications. So it emails me whenever there's a change in the status. And on Tuesday, I get an email saying, we've attempted a delivery to your house. No one was home. We're going to try again later in the afternoon. So I'm like, oh, cool. I remember this happening in the past, and it took them maybe, I think, a couple of days to retry. Like, there's definitely a whole day. They didn't retry that afternoon. There was definitely a day, and then it got resent, and it was all good. Someone was home, and they picked it up. So Wednesday comes and goes, and I'm like, okay, I won't worry about it. Thursday comes and goes, and I'm waiting for the you know, email update. Nothing happens. Friday comes along, and I'm waiting for the email update, and nothing happens again. I'm like, what's happened with this package? So I write to Big Bad, and I'm trying to go through USPS and go through their website to escalate this. And it brings up a screen where I have to type in the sender's address, which I don't know, and there's a tick box to say I don't know the sender's address. But then it gets me to type in my address, and the only option for states that I've got are US states. So I literally cannot proceed. Yep. I can't fill out the form because I've got an Australian address. So I write to Big Bad Toy Store and say, look, here's the tracking. It's been sitting here for 4 days. They haven't re-delivered it. Can you follow up? And I get a response today saying, which annoyingly says, once we send it, it's not our responsibility anymore. But here's the conversion tracking number. So I'm clicking the link that Big Bad Toy Store are giving me. And the status that that link is giving me is to say, we're going to attempt a re-delivery. And that was from Tuesday. Yet Big Bad Toy Store give me some other tracking number that shows that it's at my post office ready to be collected. I've had nothing in the mail. I've had no slip.
Delivering it to your
house.
Yeah, your house. Okay, because I've ordered tons of stuff without any problem, but it goes to the post office.
No, this is house. So what would normally happen is you get a slip in the mail saying this is now waiting at your post office.
Yeah, yeah. Come and get it.
And theoretically, they should update the link to say we tried to deliver it. It wasn't delivered. So I'm not really sure if this thing's at the post office. Where it is. So
you've got to ask, because otherwise they're going to send it back after so long.
That's right. Yeah. After 5 days, they send it back. So I'll go in on Monday and sort it out. But that's pretty disappointing. It's and the response from Big Bad Toy Store to say, well, you know,
too bad, so sad.
Well, update the link to give me the proper tracking number. I don't know where they got this new tracking number from. Why should it convert when it gets to Australia to a different number? So, like, at least in Ben's example, your eBay had your back, you didn't get it. I'm sitting here going, if I don't get this, or if this has gone missing or missing in action, Big Bag Toy Store is just going to wipe their hands and say, follow it up with USPS. So,
pretty much.
So anyway, to get into my I'm a double soapbox. as a both a vintage and a modern toy collector, I go through phases. Sometimes I focus on vintage, sometimes I focus on modern. And for the last couple of years, I've been going through a vintage toy phase. Now, there's a reason for that, which I'll talk to, but recently I've gone back to collecting more modern toys coming out of a vintage phase. And I thought, I wonder why this is the case. And I sat down and reflected on it. And I can really attribute this trend to my experiences with the dodgy and now defunct online Australian toy retailer Premium Collectibles. So the reason being, about 2 years ago, I was placing a lot of modern toy orders. So they'd do pre-orders, you'd order the product, and then it would come in, say, a year's time. Ultimately, it never came because Premium Collectibles does not deliver.
You sure it wasn't sitting at your...
that's right. That one never got shipped and I never got the tracking number.
That's a bad joke.
So all the things I'd placed things orders for...
Like a post office with your name on.
Yeah, possibly. So all the things I placed ordered for lines like Star Wars Black, Ninja Turtles, Masterpiece, NECA, DC Collectibles, etc., never got fulfilled. And it was a frustrating exercise to then, now these things had been released for 6 months, a year, to try and go back and collect. And I sort of probably just wrote that stuff off a little bit and said, well, I didn't get it now. I'm not going to chase it down at secondary market prices. I'll sort of write it off. And in that void, go back and just reignite my passion for vintage. But then, and there was a couple of good scores from Nick and some really nice eBay scores and that sort of thing. And, so got back into vintage. Now, what's happened in the vintage space? One thing that happened from 1 July this year was GST came in on all low-value imports into Australia. So if you go onto eBay now and you buy from a US seller, 10% extra onto the price. Not that I mind necessarily paying 10% extra to get something, but this is on top of what are ridiculously expensive shipping rates. You might pay $40 to ship a single figure. Mm-hmm. So you're getting 10% plus ridiculous shipping prices, plus the seeming rise in the cost of collectibles, maybe thanks to the likes of Toys That Made Us. Some things are becoming more and more expensive.
Yep. And just on that, just to put it in perspective, like, if I wanted to buy a Deadpool figure from the United States, let's say a Marvel Legends Deadpool figure that's, you know, there right now, one figure potentially on eBay would set me back $40 shipping. So it's not like, yep, I'm buying 30 Marvel Legends and it's costing me $40 to ship. No, it's one figure, yeah, yep, will cost me $40.
Yep.
To ship 30 Marvel Legends, probably in excess of $100. Mm-hmm. And that's the shipping prices we contend with here in Australia. And sometimes, you know, it puts you off buying anything because the shipping is just so astronomically adverse to what the actual figure's worth.
Yeah. And are we talking eBay with what
I'm talking eBay?
Yeah, yeah. And I've been caught out with before where you see, you look at chasing a particular figure, too expensive, and then you see one, you go, that's a great price. You click buy now and you go, probably should have read how much the damn shipping was. I'm paying the same, if not more, than the other prices.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. So in kind of that environment, and also the dollar, we're also contending with probably a 70 cent to US dollar conversion.
Very much a fluctuating dollar right now, too.
Yeah, it fluctuates.
At the time of recording.
Yeah. So it's become less appealing to me. And I found, and then as well, on top of this, just before the GST came in, I was buying a bit of stuff off eBay, and I reckon 50% of my eBay transactions were going wrong. So they were sending the wrong boxes, they were out of stock. I kept trying to buy these Predator figures and they kept being out of stock. I'd buy it, nope, sorry, we're out of stock, I'd go somewhere else, buy it. When I finally bought it from China, it would arrive and it would be all crushed, or they'd bend the box to fit it into another box, or they'd send it in a bag, and I'm just like, oh, this is so annoying.
Or you'd say, I'm a mint in box collector.
I said all that up front.
Yeah, so you mint. So Trent would say, hey guys, I'm a mint in box collector, can you make sure the package isn't right? And they'd be like, oh, sorry, it's actually coming off the blister card. And you're like, well, I don't want it then. Yeah, you know, exactly.
That was happening as well.
Yeah. Wow.
So the classic was a Chinese seller that I said, look, I'm mint in box, so I want the box to arrive. They're like, don't worry, we'll inspect it before we send it. They put it in a bag and sent it, and it got totally crushed.
Like,
and I said,
plastic,
look.
Like a plastic bag.
Like a plastic bag. And I took a photo of it, and I said, look what happened. And they're like, we inspected it. It was fine when it went out. Yes, it was fine. And then it went in a bag and through the postal. What do you expect? Yes, it was cheaper for you to send it that way, but it totally got destroyed. So
that's like saying it was fine before you put it in the washing machine and turned the washing machine on, but...
Yeah. Do you want to talk any more to out of stock while we're at this juncture?
Yeah, I will. I've encountered this eBay problem quite recently. I don't want to get into the specifics of the item because I don't want to name the seller, the company. I don't think that's quite fair at this point. But it's been a frustrating experience because I bought an item that I really had my heart set on, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles modern item that I really had my heart set on, because I'm really trying to wrap that era up before the next one starts and things go up and get out of price more and more as we go. So I bought this item and I was really happy with it. In the days that followed, I noticed it started shooting up in price, like other sellers had them and they were going up in price. So I thought, oh, that's a bit interesting. Anyway, a few days later, I get this random message out of the blue saying the item that you have purchased is out of stock. We're not sure when we will receive stock. You know, you have, you know, two choices basically. You can wait for the item and see if we get it, or we can offer you a refund. And I thought the way the email was written, they were really emphasizing that they'd just like me to take the refund and cut and run. So I wrote back and said, look, I'll think about it and I'll get back to you in a few days. You know, I'm, you know, really, really want that item and I'm really keen to get it. So if you can get it, you know, please do. I really want it. So I spend my few days thinking about it and I think, well, I might go for the refund if I really can't get it, but I'd like to have a conversation with them first and see where this goes before I cut my losses. So I sent them an email and then a message, and I got this message back saying, all items take up to 10 days to ship, you know, basically saying, you know, you shouldn't be harassing us yet. Well, guess what? It's 17 days since I bought it, you know, or 10 business days, sorry, 17 business days. And I'm like, well, you know, it should have shipped by now. I understand you might have issues sourcing.
Didn't they say it was out of stock?
They did. They did. But,
so why are they coming back at you with shipping times then if they don't have the product to ship?
Because my strong suspicion is it was just a generic email.
Yeah, right.
But I could be wrong. Like a generated email, it just... but it did my head in just reading that because I just wanted a clear-cut answer on we can't get it or yes, yeah. We can or we're still waiting. Or you know, I just wanted someone to acknowledge my question and I just thought they weren't listening to me at all. So I wrote back. And said, look, you know, it's actually been 17 working days. And I got one that seemed partly generic and partly like, as we told you before, it takes 10 working days.
Mm.
You know, basically don't bother us. You know, wait the 10 days.
That's when you click like, the negative feedback button.
Yeah, I'm, exactly. And I'm thinking I'm this close to it. And I haven't done it yet because I like to try and give people the benefit of the doubt if I can. And anyway... I write back to him again and say, look, you know, I'm really getting sick of the tone of your emails and the seeming generic, but on one hand, but also quite personal in the other, as if, you know, you've told me something and I'm ignoring you. It's been 17 working days. What's going on? I get this message back. Well, we did tell you that we're having trouble sourcing it. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm wanting an update on that. You know, what's going on? So anyway, I get this, I get into it again. And they're like, look, you know, you can take the refund or cut your losses. So I'm sort of at that point where I haven't jumped yet, but I'm probably going to take the refund. But it just felt really disempowering.
Well, why advertise it in the first place? You know, if you don't have stock in hand.
Well, absolutely. If you don't have stock in hand.
I can tell you why.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They're not managing their stock properly.
Yep. Yeah.
A lot of these larger retailers, you know, like, and this is just an example. I'm not saying this company did it, but just to give you the reality of what companies face. Collectible Chaos, and they've been great, so I'm not saying they've got a problem, but they had an item on their eBay website, Predator Figure. And I looked at the price and I'm like, well, I can save shipping. It's going to cost me $10 to ship. I'll just go down there and buy it for the same price and save myself $10. So I went down there and purchased the item off the shelf and they put it through the register and I'm done and happy. Now, at some point, if they had a really good system, they would have automatically removed that. But there might have been a moment where that was available on
and
eBay.
And someone might have clicked it.
Yeah, and you could have theoretically clicked it. So these stores have to manage that.
I get that.
And they're not doing it.
Yeah. No, they're not. And the thing that I found quite disconcerting, I guess, is that for me, it took them days to let me know. So, like, I'd paid for that days before I got an email telling me that it was out of stock and that I haven't...
Well, they would have only known when they went to go and fulfill your order and they realised they didn't have it.
Yeah, I get that. It's just frustrating. And then I felt like giving me the runaround when I was actually trying to resolve it and make a final call as to whether to cut my losses or wait it out. You know, my preference would still be to wait it out but if it's at all possible. But, I reached this point where... I'm like, I'm probably going to cut my losses now. But it felt so disempowering and it reminded me of the inequality that sellers and buyers have. And I understand that a lot of people sell stuff on eBay. They're relying on it as either all of their income or part of their income and they're making a living. And so I get that they need protective measures. But the flip side of that is imagine I click on a buy it now item or an auction and then I turn around and say, oh, yeah, I thought I had the money, but it's unavailable. Don't worry. Don't send me the item. It's okay.
The money is out of stock.
Yeah, the money's out of stock. Exactly. Yeah. The money's out of the account. But don't worry. You can keep the item.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be struck off eBay if I did that.
Just going
because
back...
you're committing to a contract to buy the item.
Correct.
But where's their contract to sell me the item?
Yeah. Just going back to what you said at the start, you said you noticed that after you'd actually clicked...
I noticed that the
price had actually gone up.
Like, yeah, on a now, number of items.
Similar items?
The same item.
Right.
But was only a few days. When I bought this item, I bought it for about the price that they were going for from other sellers.
At that time.
At that time.
Right.
It was so only a few days after that they started to jet up.
Can I tell you what I think's happened? I think is that they've gone, wow, this is really spiking. Whether it's the toys that made us or whatever the case is, then they've gone, huh, we could. This is the price that Darren's agreed to buy it at. Or if we tell him it's out of stock and then he, you know, give him his refund, we can sell it to someone else for $10 more.
Absolutely.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah,
that's, a bit more than $10. I mean, that's, but yeah, conspiracy theories and all the rest of it.
That's the conspiracy theory that ran through my mind, particularly because it's dragged on so long because of the generic emails and taking a few days to
get a proper answer.
I've had longer to think about it, whereas I might have just taken the money and cut and run if they'd gotten back to me quicker on what was happening.
Mm.
But yeah, that thought has crossed my mind. It's disappointing because, you know, I really, really like the item and would like to wrap up that, you know, that era of Turtles for me before it shoots up anymore. But yeah, but more disappointing than that, I think, was, the lack of response.
Mm, yeah. And just to round off what I was saying in my soapbox, which links beautifully to that point, for me now, with all those factors of what's happened to Darren, what's happened to me personally on eBay, the prices, the shipping, I'm now steering clear of eBay and only using it as a last resort and mainly maybe using it a bit more within Australia. The emergence of a great little Aussie retailer, online retailer called The Little Toy Company has seen me again gain that confidence to buy from an online Australian retailer and place some more orders for modern toys. And I had a successful order with them. Really good prices, you know, better than retail prices. You know, maybe like, you know, $30 for a Black Series figure instead of $35, $40
exactly.
That you're paying. So very happy with that. While still keeping an eye out on vintage items, the pendulum for me seems to have swung back in favor of modern toys, at least for the time being. And the once strong tool in my toolkit of eBay is, for me, on the chopping block.
Yeah.
Whilst eBay cannot control GST shipping costs and the overall price, as well as the Aussie dollar, it can do better to ensure sellers are doing the right thing and providing a quality service. And if customers have enough of these poor experiences, they will move on from using your site because there is a lot of competition out there and I can source my product in different ways.
Definitely.
All right, that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening to us on our soapbox and for our Jurassic World review. We thank you for tuning into another episode of Toy Power and special shout out to our Patreons, Lux Toy Collector, Jose Gonzalez, Brett G, and Mr. Chris Wisdom. On that note, we will see you around the toy aisles.
And just before we go, on a moment of indulgence, I would like to thank Val Staples and the people at He-Man.org for putting a link up to our interview with Danielle Galuta, also known as Penny Dreadful, and also thank the people that listened to that episode. If that was the first episode that you heard and you're back for more, thank you. If that was the first episode you listened to and you're not back for more, thank you for giving us a go anyway. And until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher. And please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but yeah.